Hello and welcome to the Landed Podcast. I'm John Montgomery, co-founder of Landed, a travel company specializing in tailor-made journeys throughout Latin America and the Antarctic. At Landed, we're devoted to exploring these regions, searching out exceptional experiences and locations for our clients. The Landed Podcast profiles some of our favorite places and brings you conversations with friends we've made along the way, explorers, artists, and visionaries. If you're a repeat listener, welcome back. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. When we think of friends in the Galapagos, the gentle, smiling faces of Reina Oleas and Roberto Plaza come readily to mind. This Ecuadorian power couple is a model of commitment to each other, to their community, and to nature. Reina is an expert in the design, evaluation, and implementation of education and sustainability projects. Her professional career as an ecologist has benefited habitats throughout Latin America and the Caribbean. For more than a decade, her talents have been devoted to the Galapagos. Roberto's life is deeply connected to the ocean. For more than 30 years, he's been one of the premier naturalist guides in the Galapagos. He's advised Costa Rica's Cocos Island National Park and the Galapagos National Park in the design of visitor and tourism management systems. In 2015, Reina and Roberto started Montemar, a holistic project combining luxury tourism, organic farming, and species preservation. For guests at Montemar, Reina and Roberto are more than hosts. They are ambassadors, advisors, and inspirations. A stay at Montemar with Reina and Roberto can be life-changing. Under their guidance, Montemar plays a leading role in Frente Insular, a Galapagueño grassroots movement that promotes community interconnectedness and responsibility. The group's broad-ranging efforts have improved food security, education, and cooperation for islanders. In 2021, Frente Insular played a pivotal role in the creation of the world's largest marine biosphere reserve. We spoke with Reina and Roberto from the yoga deck at Montemar on a rainy morning as giant tortoises grazed nearby. Reina Oleas, Roberto Plaza, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you. We're here at Montemar in the highlands of Santa Cruz Island. The cloud is covering the mountain right now, and because of that we have some rain, which is really rare in the Galapagos. What a pleasure to be here on your yoga platform. Thanks for letting us be here with you.
It's really a pleasure.
It's really a pleasure to have you here, John.
Aaron was able to come and stay here a few months ago. And I don't know if you remember, but I came like 2016.
Mm-hmm. I remember
Aaron,
clearly.
I remember. And I was so impressed. But a lot's happened since then. And Montemar has really evolved. Do you want to tell us about the project?
Well, the Montemar project started roughly 15 years ago when we bought this property, which was an abandoned farm that was totally covered with invasive elephant grass, blackberries, guavas. But we fell in love with the place because of its location, the view of the ocean, and the knowledge that we were in the tortoise territory. Which for us was like a blessed, the idea of thinking that we can develop a project up in the highlands where together where the tortoises live, you know. And so when we started this, it was really just the idea of a family project, like a life project for the family. We were not thinking of that it will become all what it is right now, really. I mean, it's been a blessing having this place and being able to develop all these things. Now the project, after all this year, has different components, agriculture with the coffee, and that actually supports the rehabilitation of the ecosystem for tortoises, and allowed us also to help scientists to and the scientists help us to understand better the needs of the tortoises. And also the sustainable houses. You know, we were able to develop, with the help of an amazing engineer, civil engineer from Quito, Miguel Samaniego, these unique architectural and engineer design of these sustainable houses. You know, all the many other things that have come along the way, then getting involved with the community and, you know, like flowers blooming, you know, more beautiful things happening around, like the vegetable garden, the yoga place, the artisan shop. Yeah. Mm. It's been an amazing ride. And
we're happy to share.
And we're happy to share
to
that.
To share it with our clients.
Which is probably the most amazing blessing we have, is to be able to share with people all these things.
You've become a catalyst for the community, and a center. You have your own gravity, maybe, within the community.
I think we have a lot of, I won't say that everything gravitates around us, actually. We're not the only ones, let's say, that lead these groups. There's all the wonderful people also leading this collective, like Alberto Andrade.
The radio host?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's like the leader of the Frente Insular de la Reserva Marina, which is this collective. And
many other beautiful souls.
And he's a beautiful soul that has this ability to naturally be a leader for everybody, you know. And so we found this fantastic soul. And together we have been able to achieve things that probably alone.
Each of us we will have never done.
Yes.
But it was this grouping that allowed us to grow. So I think it's the goodwill of so many people that has allowed us to do the things that we're doing. And I usually say that if I would be thinking like in a regular way of designing a responsibility, social responsible program, for example, I will have to hire, I don't know how many, dozens of people in order to execute all the things that we have been able to execute. But it's not because of us, it's because all these wonderful minds that came together and are putting the energy to make things happen. So,
in other words, if we would have sat down before doing all of these and think about all of these and try to write it down what we're going
right.
to do, it probably will have never happened.
Yeah.
But I guess that the time when we decided to start walking this path, after all our background and experience before this, is what allowed us along the way to improvise and organically start identifying the opportunities by heart to put all these different things together. You know? If we will have tried to do this same project when we just married, let's say 30 years ago, probably not, because we didn't have all the experience in the different, in the field of conservation, training with NGOs and knowing all the problematics, me as a guide and as a consultant with the National Park, that nurtured us enough. So when we started walking the path of this project, the opportunities were obvious, were clear for us, maybe not for other people. And we did it by heart because it's what we love. We identified it, what we wanted to do as a family project, life project.
And I do believe that all these components that are born from what we believe, which is a bit different, that I usually make a clarification. That's not something that we are doing because we believe in. It's not because there's a market for it. It's not because people are interested and we want to give people what it's interested. This is the path that we chose as a family because it's the path that we want to walk because we believe.
Mm-hmm. During the pandemic was difficult for everyone worldwide, but it was almost a matter of life and death for the Galapagos community. Right? It was not possible to bring food in. Do you want to talk about that experience and what it taught the community and your role in, as participants in that?
Yeah, so in that time, there were few boats bringing things for humans in the Galapagos. The frontiers were closed and nobody was able to get in and to get out. Lots of people with no savings. And in an economy that was based in tourism, they didn't have much money. And they didn't have many people were struggling to prepare a bowl of soup for their families. For us, what was amazing is that we got to meet many people. Many people like us that were willing to think on the we before the me, myself, and I, as I always put it.
To think as a community.
To think as a community and in the common well-being, and not only my well-being. And that space in time that allowed all of us to meet, because it's many of us. We are just one little grain on the bigger sand, and they are beautiful souls from every economic level, from every academic level, from every social level, and COVID allowed us to meet. So when we met and we saw to each other's eyes and we were like, you know, there's people in bad shape, we need to do something. And we were thinking it was a conversation, and the one thought, you know, there's lots of farms that have products that are not gathered because there's nobody, they no couldn't money. Pay people to gather fruits or vegetables. And why don't we ask the permission to gather those things? And the other was, yeah, let's do it. And you know, I think somebody else and somebody else will join. And then the other one communicated with the other one. And I say that there wasn't a big matrix of planification. It was like a beehive. And when there was vibration of one of the little bees, the other one respond, and then the other one respond, and we became active. And we always use the word like we activate. So when there's a challenge, we activate. We get aware and we start to put our radar of how we can help. So one contributed with the truck, the other one went and helped us volunteer to pick because we needed hands to pick, and the other one paid for the gas. The other one brought the food in order to feed the volunteers, and
someone brought tools if it was needed.
And we went every week with this group of beautiful souls to pick things. And then another group was in charge of distributing the things that we brought in baskets. And then another group was in charge of identifying the people in need in order to give the baskets.
Wow.
And so it was not us. It was this, I say, the strength of a community.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I love this saying of, I don't know, I read it the other day, but for me it was so meaningful. I think it was Buddha that said many, many years ago that the next illuminated being was not going to be one human. Like it has been in history many wonderful souls that have appeared and have guided spirituality, but it's actually going to be the strength of an illuminated community. And that's how I felt, because it was a work of love. There was no economic interest behind it. Anybody was getting anything beyond the satisfaction of knowing that all of us were in a better shape. So more than, I don't know, I think it was more than 5,000 baskets that were distributed in that period of time.
5,730 something. Alberto repeats that all the time.
So, but it wasn't us and it wasn't him, it was all of us. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't have done it without them.
And more people, it was amazing because it was like a snowball.
Like a snowball.
A snowball. So at the beginning where we put the truck, also another neighbor, Roberta, I drove the truck, or Roberto drove the truck, volunteers came. But then when people knew that we were helping, they say, we also want to help. But a lot of people wanted to help and didn't know how. But when they realized we were doing this, other people say, what can I do? If they had a groceries shop, they say, well, I can give you
donated.
Maybe oil, maybe rice, other type of products
that were not from the
land. They're basics, but you cannot harvest here.
No.
So in that way, the baskets were more complete, you know. And it was incredible.
And for example, during that time, it was so interesting because...
Sometimes someone, they identified someone was sick, had a problem, needed medicine, so we activated it, like Reina said. So everybody spread the voice and everybody put as much as they could to get the medicine for that person and make sure it was okay.
One of the things that we found out because of those really hard conversations is that, for example, that there were a lot of young people that were having lots of challenges. Because if you're stuck in a tiny house with not a lot of things to do during COVID, with maybe hard situations at home, you needed a place to have fun. So, and that's how another little project started. We decided that we should take young members of the community out to the ocean and to do things while we were like really in this situation. So one person had like a couple of kayaks, the other one had another kayak, Roberto had a little hobby cat, and all of us put the things together and we went to the ocean. And that was a wonderful opportunity for kids that have never explored aquatic sports to do it. And I still remember with lots of love. I was in a kayak with one of the girls in our community.
In the paddleboard.
And while I was paddling, and the girl told me, I asked her, was this, do you like it? And I was like, yeah, I love it. Is this the first time that you are doing paddleboard? And she was like, yeah. And I asked her, do you want to do it? And she grabbed the paddle and she was paddling and she told me, and I asked her, you're doing such a great job. You really look like an expert. And she turned around and said to me, I am an expert. And I was like, wow, yeah, where did you do it? No, this has been my dream my whole life. So I've been practicing. So I'm an expert. And to realize that a girl in an island,
and she was 8, 9.
She was 8 or 9. Didn't have access to the ocean, for example, and to things that will be so valued in other places. Was so heartwarming, and we knew that we had a big path in the front. So we decided to start doing that more often.
And that was girl that made you stop along the way because she saw a blue-footed booby she'd never seen before and grew up on the island all her life.
So we were paddling by the cliff, and there was one blue-footed booby that just landed.
On the
main bay.
From the main dock to the Angermayer Point, that direction.
An academy bay.
Cliff.
Yeah, an academy bay.
And she'd never seen one.
And we learned that, and it's a reality here, many, many kids, they don't go to the ocean often. Many do not know how to swim. Some of them, they've worn a mask for the first time and they were putting their face down and seeing fishes for the first time. When you live on the Galapagos Island, one of the most privileged places in Earth for marine wildlife and land wildlife. And that absence of link of local people with this magic place, it's an inspiration to keep walking and keep searching for options and finding paths of how we can put humans in contact, because we do believe that if you don't know something, it's really hard to love it
and protect it. And fight for its protection. No? So really,
we're looking at a giant avocado tree, maybe 3 tortoises underneath it, and your farm is up the hill here, your huerto. You were able to feed people from these resources on your property. Do you think that the pandemic and sharing the way you were able to changed people beyond just building the community? Maybe you changed people's lives about what they thought they could achieve.
Well, I think there are some stories specific. You know, with any project you make, I believe that it's difficult to like change a lot of people with one project. But if you can change a few, I don't know, 1 out of 20, or and make a difference in their life, that's a multiplying effect. I think is amazing. And we have the story of Ian. Ian is a son of Anna that was here that makes the crochet. And Ian, his mother was very protective. So it was, Ian wanted to be part of the Frente Insular, but the mother was a little afraid that maybe she will find kids that were bad influence or something. But finally, little by little, we win the trust of Anna, and Ian start coming in the different activities. And when he found the huerto, the garden for him was like, he started doing one in his garden, right? In a tiny little garden, and coming. He was the first one to volunteer every time there was work to do in the garden. And he found his vocation. Vocation, you say?
Yeah.
So then he wanted to study agriculture. And with the help of us
and many more people
that somehow were linked to the things Frente Insular was doing, he was able to earn a scholarship in Costa Rica. Earth is a university called
Earth University.
Escuela Agricola de la Región Tropical Húmeda, Earth.
Amazing.
And so he got a scholarship. The scholarship covered part of his living over there. So with Frente Insular and many people that helped the Frente Insular, through the Frente Insular, also Montemar helps and sends money to him. And he's so committed, he's the best student. And he sends the report. We never ask, but he sends the reports of his
grades
and everything. He's amazing, he's amazing.
So it would be such an honor, imagine, when he graduates, he comes back and he can be helping us be in charge of the garden and the coffee plantation and
that would be I think the best example of how the garden changed the life of one person so fantastically, you know. The amazing thing is that they not only they learn the importance of agradecido, como se dice?
thankful. But you know, when you ask about how we have changed lives, I really think our community changed us also. And from my perspective, it's not only what I've been able to do, but I think it was this intermingling of wholehearted intentions that allowed us to grow. And that would haven't happened if we weren't together, because it's like a positive cycle of good things. So yes, we changed lives, but
your life was changed.
My life was changed.
Yeah. So what is the name of the community you call?
We call us the community, we're together in this movement that's called Frente Insular de la Reserva Marina de Galapagos.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when we talk to people about how special the Galapagos is, they say, it's such a shame that people live there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you haven't met the people who live there yet. And the Galapagos exists as it is today, 97% protected, 3% occupied by human beings. It exists in the form, the pristine form we find it in today, unlike other island chains we could talk about, the Canaries, Hawaii, because of the courage and the commitment of the local community. Can we talk about maybe some examples? Maybe Alberto is a good example. Reina, do you want to?
I believe that there wouldn't be conservation as we know it without people living here, without tourism either. Because at the end of the day, we think about tourism, it's bringing the entrance to a national park that also finances conservation. And there's many, an important part of philanthropy. It's really important for conservation here. And if people do not come to Galapagos to see it and to fall in love with it, there wouldn't be philanthropy that will finance conservation and patrolling and lots of things that have been happening in Galapagos. So I completely cannot see the Galapagos that we can see today if there wasn't committed people in the community. But there's many examples of things that have happened because of the community. One is the example of La Reserva Marina Hermandad. that was recently created in a joint venture with Costa Rica, and I think it's Panama.
Panama, Costa Rica, Colombia.
And Colombia.
Amazing.
A beautiful project that has been in the mind of many people for many, many years. But it was after the big intervention where they cut this big Chinese boat that was doing illegal mm-hmm. fishing on the marine reserve.
They were using these aggregation mm-hmm. devices.
Between many things. I mean, like there were many tons of protected species inside their storage place.
300 tons.
Outside of the national park.
But actually they were caught because they were crossing the inside the national park. That's what they were caught. They were caught while they were in.
So this is an illegal fishing technique coming into protected areas.
It's illegal to be in the protected area.
And harvesting species, many of them which are endangered. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. in any case, species that have a protected status here in the space where they were harvested.
Yes.
Or illegally caught.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and like, so they were. This vessel was caught in the protected area.
2017 or so.
I think it was 2017. Okay. It was caught up in the protected area and the boat.
It was caught by San Cristobal. Mm. They cross from west to east from the northern part of Isabela. On the west, northwest, through the islands. Towards the southeast, and they were passing on the eastern tip of San Cristobal, where they were caught.
They went past Rávida?
Well, above Santiago. Okay. Above Santiago, above North Seymour.
Uh-huh. I mean, these are prime waters of the Galapagos.
Well, this is part of the marine reserve.
And they have 300
they're not
tons
allowed
no
in.
Question.
No question. They're not allowed here. So the vessel was captured, and all the storage place was opened, and there that's when we saw the dimension of the fishing capacity and what we have lost, because it was irreversible. They were, I mean, like all the animals were dead. I mean, like that's something that we could not recover. But so the vessel was captured, and the community, some people in the community identified that it was important to make this problem visible for the world.
Visible.
Yeah. So everybody can know what's happening. And they started a big campaign built mm-hmm. with the support of many people. Really, lots of famous people start calling. They got to know what was happening. Famous soccer players, actors, and everybody was like, what? What's happening? And to make the story short, after they organized this big march with the local community, mm-hmm. Little kids dressed as sharks and
a big protest.
And they write a manifesto.
Uh-huh. And we
wrote a manifesto.
And the community.
The guy that's leading this, Alberto.
Mm-hmm. Ah, Alberto Andrade.
But he's a humble former fisherman, right? Uh-huh. Now kind of a radio personality here in the
Globe. He has a program.
He educated himself as a communicator. When he was like saying that he's a very sensitive human, so he was a fisherman, but at a point he realized all the damage that the fishing industry was doing, so he started feeling kind of like not so good with himself being a fisherman, started educating himself as a communicator and shifting, you know, to protect instead of just harvest the ocean.
And it was Alberto with the help of many other people, because that's the for me the main issue. It's not one, it's not us, it's not him. It's this social tissue, as I call it, this social tissue that's knitted by the activities of each of us. Because we couldn't have done this manifesto, for example. If it was one person writing the manifesto, good luck, good for you, but there's nothing else beyond. But if you've got many thousand signatures for that manifesto, then it's a different story. And you are requesting your government to make the marine reserve, to expand the marine reserve and hopefully do a corridor that will connect mm-hmm. it with the
Cocos Island.
With Cocos Island, so the protected areas that migrate have a better future. Yeah. It was not him, it was not the authorities, it was mm-hmm. all of us. Signing and protesting and walking the path.
And Alberto was like the natural leader, putting his voice, his abilities for communication, but But there were others that were leading, helping, gathering people and understanding, like Nicolas Cheese, like Eddie Salazar. There are guides, but are activists in conservation.
So now, fast forward the story, this pressure from a local community was something that triggered negotiations, international bilateral negotiations and multilateral negotiations. And all this pressure and having the international attention on something that suddenly was visible by wasn't discussed before became a reality. So now there is a tangible, expanded reserve. And I couldn't think
with
of that
without funding to protect it.
Yeah, with funding to protect it.
Without
this local community.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, like, there's many stories of those. And
so, because, when they call everybody to go out and to this march that ended in the park, and Alberto and the other leaders there, and Alberto reading the manifesto publicly before they send it to the government, it's the first time since we've been in Galapagos that absolutely everybody from the different sectors was walking together. Politicians of different parties.
Scientists, farmers,
yes, all the taxi cooperatives, everybody that you can imagine, people from the market, everybody.
I don't think there wasn't
everybody
many people at home.
Doing, walking and protesting for a single thing that was, we need to protect. I mean, my hairs are going like this right now, like goosebumps, because it was like, wow. It was a demonstration that 100% of the community wanted to protect, understood that it was important to protect the marine reserve. Finally, the law for Galapagos, which is the main restriction, the one that puts the guidelines for the restrictions and controls to prevent the growth, overgrowth of the islands and more immigration and all that, was a consensus of the community. Of course, not everybody is happy with all the things that came out of that consensus, but finally it was all the community of Galapagos that worked to make that a reality.
That's
to start with. I mean,
the special
law
for Galapagos.
It's not perfect, but it's something, no?
So it's the special law of Galapagos that passed in 1998, the one that established all the restrictions for everything, for people just moving to Galapagos or how you buy real estate and all those things. Who can work here. That's an initiative from local community. And there was a participation of all the sectors in dialogues that took many, many months. And it was facilitated and negotiated in a way that made it happen. If we wouldn't have the special law of Galapagos in 1998, this place would be completely different because there wasn't any restrictions for people
moving here.
For
development, for buying land, for building.
For everything.
What I see when I'm in town, when I talk to people from the Galapagos, is so much pride in how special these islands are and how they must be protected. And there's a sort of a self-will to keep things, pristine. People care about the environment. They care about the local community. They take care of each other in a way that's not common.
You know, I would say that there's more people that care about environment here than in many other places. But everywhere in the world, I mean, like, there's many different people. There's people that are not that happy and may be willing or likely to are not comfortable with those limits. But I think more and more people are joining this big path of trying to keep nature in the best situation that we can.
There's tremendous pressure, and it's constant pressure to change what you have here. So, I'm sure it's not unanimous, but the majority is supportive of the protections?
I think there's this duality, because, yeah, if you talk with almost anybody that lives here, they will say, yeah, that is, conservation is important, that because of the conservation, we have business, because people come.
Tourism is your number one industry, yeah. And transportation, mostly related to tourism,
exactly.
Is your number two.
But on the other hand, also, everyone would like to grow economically, because they relate the economy directly with well-being, with happiness, with all these things. So, of course, protecting limits in these islands the opportunities. And that's where the conflict, I don't know if I'm expressing myself correctly, but there's where the conflict in the mind of people I see sometimes is like, yes, I mean, I know we have to protect, but I also want to be, I would like to have more money to pay my university for my kids. I don't know.
Travel
to,
more.
To have a better house or more comfortable, or be able to buy a bigger refrigerator. I don't know, whatever. Sure. And and for them it's difficult to identify which opportunities are coherent with conservation or not. And sometimes you find people fighting for things that they want because they want to do better, without realizing that maybe those things will affect the well-being of nature. So they cannot make all the connections so clear, but they have clear in their minds that conservation is the reason why they have finally a business, whatever the business is. But sometimes it's difficult to make the connections with how can I improve my way of living, which opportunities I have, because the opportunities are limited here, definitely.
And if I try to, I think it's the dilemma of the world itself. It's not just here. It's the dilemma of the world, and this idea that we have designed as humanity, and defined success as money success. I mean, like having money or having economic well-being and buying things, and that's like a way of measuring success at the end of the day in our society. So when you think about that model, it's not really sustainable from an environmental point of view, because not everybody can keep wanting and having more. Because if there's many of us, and if everybody has one more cars, more houses, bigger houses, and more dresses and everything, there's no earth that can be able to give us all the things that we need. So at the end of the day, I'll say that it's a dilemma of growth in the whole world. But here, in a micro level, you can see it really easily, because you can see that if we want more hotels, those hotels need more building materials, and those need to be imported by boats that may bring more invasive species. We need more people to serve those hotels, and if they do not live here, they may come from the mainland Ecuador.
And
these new employees have needs. They need sewage, they need potable water, and they need lots of things.
And if
and
more
those
people
things,
come, more flights will come, and you just add, you know?
And so it's everything is exponential. So I think it's the reflection of the dilemma of the growth in the world itself and what's happening in a bigger scale. Because when you see Galapagos as this beautiful, magical place, and you see so easy how the growth of one is going to have the impact on the other. But in a world scale, we are also an island, a big island called Earth.
We're
on a big island. Exactly.
Yeah.
So we are, I think, only reflecting in a tiny scale the challenge that we have as humanity have on the big island called Earth.
To live within limits. I mean, if you want a car here, a car has to leave for a car to come.
Mm-hmm. But you know, one of the things that I've always... I see more clearly now is that if our conscience is in peace and we are comfort with ourselves and we realize that as humans we don't need many things to be happy, we are whole just being what we are, We don't meet many things, but the more our mind is not in peace, and we are looking for things outside of us, and those things usually require consumption. But if our mind and our soul is in peace, we realize that everything that you need is just here. There's no many things that you need, but that's hard. And I think that may be the most difficult challenge that we're facing, is how we can have a brighter, not brighter, but I would say a higher consciousness that allows us to see that. Because when that happens, things may be there and may not be, because you don't need them, and your happiness doesn't, it's not linked with that. And you can just be here without many things.
And the problem is that, I'm not talking about Galapagos, about the world, is that the system, which is consumerism, is trying to go the other way. Because it's telling you all the time, you'll be happier if you buy this, the media, you know, and the propaganda, everywhere you go. So it's, oh, you need this to be happier, you need this, oh no, now this one, this new one is going to make you happier than the one before, you need it, you need it, you need it. And you get distracted, and the mind is a monkey mind, like the Buddha said, a monkey mind. It's just all over jumping, but not in peace. Not. Yeah. So here, living here, isolated, and being able, I think, for me in particular, and I guess for Reina also, probably, that's one of the gifts of the pandemic, and to be able to connect with people that we came to realize that we're there all the time. And we pass in a car, and didn't even realize they were there. But all this connection with the community is what gives me the best feeling. Satisfaction, knowing that they are there, that we can support them, that they can support us. And like Reina said, oh, finally you're in peace, you're calm. That feeling that I came to realize through all the things that happened during the pandemic, that we got trapped and everything, it's been the biggest gift for me, I think.
And when you were talking about the limits, the limits are, when you think about, if you go back, if you're living in the States and you want to buy a car, you go and buy the car, if you have the money. If there's somebody else in the family that wants a car, they are going to buy the car. And when they tell you, you can have a car because you own a farm, but you cannot have a car for the farm and another for the family. You have to have one car. So I remember still the discussion of, okay, we need to find a car that can host our family, can host the friends of our kids, and it can also carry all these big loads of things that we need for the farm. And we do a lot of research, and we found this one car, that it's a mix between a truck and a
double cabin, four-wheel drive diesel truck.
So then, even your consumption is more conscious.
More for what you really need. No. Mm-hmm.
And then we realize with time that, and we used to have, I mean, like when we didn't live in Galapagos, that, I mean, like it was so natural to think about consumption. And when there's limits, then you rethink about consumption, and you rethink about the impact that consumption has on the earth and has on the rest of the community, and the sophistication of that consumption takes a different perspective. And even the consumption itself, it's you really think about it if you have to do it, because maybe you don't need it. Maybe you don't need it. And at the end of the day, maybe that's one of the biggest lessons of all this path. Yeah. We don't need many things. I mean, like, it's a pleasure, and we feel. But you need community, and you need the land that feeds us, and you need the air to breathe, and you need the water. But the rest is something that we've created with lots of imagination.
Aaron, we're here on a double date. You're super quiet. Is there anything you want to say or ask?
I think a lot of people come to the Galapagos for wildlife and to see these incredible geological formations. But it's really the community that makes it possible, and this need to think more creatively about conservation. And you can't do that without a lot of introspection and mindfulness about what's most important. And what I love about coming to Montemar and sending guests here is that it allows that opportunity to really connect with nature, connect with the community, which is a surprise to most people who come to the Galapagos, that they can have this deep connection with such beautiful people. And it's a heart, there's a feeling of thankfulness and peace and gratitude for this special place. And that is because of all of the efforts and intention that you both have put in.
I would like to say something about the Galapagos. Maybe take Galapagos as an example. And wherever you are, wherever you live, try to be more conscious of your community, what's happening around, the impact that you have in your closest ecosystem. Because if we want to save us, because I'm not talking about saving the planet is going to be here. No? If we wanted to save us as humans, we need to connect as a community, and we need to be aware of the impact we leave everywhere around the world, because saving the Galapagos is not going to save the humanity. But it could be taken as an example of a different way of living, more conscious, more aware of the impact we have with the community that surrounds us, how can we help each other and the environment around us, the footprint we leave in the environment around us. Because if we think, oh yeah, no, they are protecting the Amazon over there, so we're gonna be okay. No, we have to protect our backyard.
It's great to be with you.
It's really great to be with you also, so we are also thankful.
It's
I
great.
Hope you'll come to your Montemar in the mountains in Utah.
So. Looking forward.
Yeah.
If you'd like to know more about custom travel in Latin America and the Antarctic, reach out to us at landedtravel.com. Since 2006, Landed's success has been built on word-of-mouth referrals. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a minute to rate the podcast or share it with a friend. Thank you for listening.